Tonight, Free to Play 85. We're here without a Brian, without a Matt, but we do have one Mark Bradshaw.
Please buy more Ubisoft games or they will kill more people like Tom Clancy. Please.
I mean, at some point you've got to stop relying on that one. Like, we'll have to workshop you a new joke.
Nothing's happened. I can't do anything for the past. I can't repeat the same things from last week.
I mean, but you're repeating things from like several months ago. I don't be able to see like a functional difference.
It's a gag. It's now a running gag. It is now a free to play tradition.
Okay, Seth MacFarlane. We also have Mike Lemieux.
Yeah, I'm covering for two people.
Yep.
Hey. You can call me Brat.
Mayan?
Lion?
Ryan?
Ryan?
Yeah,
know.
It works. And Dave Owen.
I guess I'm actually going to have to talk on this one, huh?
I mean, it would help. Just don't say anything about Ubisoft to Tom Clancy, and I think we're good.
Understood.
Before this podcast started, I was thinking, well, I need something to talk about. And then I remember that Ubisoft did something really stupid recently. And I brought this up. And none of us could... We all acknowledged the fact that Ubisoft did something really stupid recently. But in the vast milieu of stupid Ubisoft events, we could not remember exactly what it was. I'm still at a loss. It's something to do with Watch Dogs. It's something to do with visual effects.
I think it might be the interview where an Ubisoft division PC team guy was like, yeah, we can't do a lot of things that we should be able to do because Ubisoft said no.
Oh, yeah. So that's, remember, this was brought about by a leak sometime.
Oh, that one where they were like confirming downgrade stuff.
Yeah.
That's probably totally fake.
Well, apparently they're just like confirming that, you know, like a mid-range PC just completely trounces the current, I guess we can't say next generation hardware, current generation hardware, because they have to turn off effects, otherwise it looks like garbage compared to PC.
Which, I mean, everyone kind of knew that it was going to look like garbage compared to PC anyway, but I feel like Ubisoft benefits more if they have a really, really good-looking PC version.
Well, I could see the idea that, at least at the start, or I don't want to defend them because I think this is ultimately harmful, but just from a devil's advocate position, I could see why it would behoove them for at least at the start of the console generation to make everything look nice. And then once you have everyone roped in, say, oh, the next generation consoles are amazing. Look how it looks on Watch Dogs. Never mind the part where it's a bad game. But look how it looks at Watch Dogs. And then just go ahead and buy Watch Dogs. And then in 2 years, they just turn on the filters and so forth. Now you guys have to get a new console because it looks like garbage compared to PC. Maybe that's the game plan. I don't know.
And I was seeing a spot post in, I think, GameSpot's forums today that was the Far Cry 3 I bought looks nothing like the Far Cry 3 from commercials. How do I make my 360 version look like that? And it's like, aw, you're never going to be able to do that. Just, you got tricked by bullshots. But yeah, I mean, it's not like Ubisoft has a very, strong reputation for being honest.
They're not, like, have a lot of integrity?
Like, EA...
Well, EA is evil. We can admit that. We just be, like, familiar and say, ah, oh, EA, you kill people today. You just actually kill people. you stinkers, you. But Ubisoft is just, I don't know. It's like your friend that used to be, like, really great running buddy with you, and they just, like, start turning bad.
It's like, you find out they're doing heroin. And it's like,
yeah.
When did you start?
Then they sell you your mom's VCR.
What's this Watch Dogs crap? What are you doing?
And yet Watch Dogs is the like most successful new IP in the last, 3 years?
I would counter with this. It is the only new IP for the past 3 years. So sure, it's going to be successful.
Oh, what about
Titanfall?
Dishonored.
Successful. Yeah, there's stuff. It's just Watch Dogs sold really, really well. Like, it sold so well, it basically confirmed everyone's crazy theories that, like, Sony could be like, hey, if we just cozy up the games and offer, like, really shitty exclusive content, then people will buy that game more on our system. And they did. Like, that game sold PS4s. And it confirmed for Ubisoft that, hey, if we just put the minimum amount of effort, then people will buy the game on hype alone.
I think that that works for a very narrow window, and that window is like at the start of a console generation. I think they can't do this in a year. I mean, I hope they can't. I hope like the libraries for all the systems are have improved that they can't do this in another year, but who knows, they might.
I mean, what, like, in a year, what, I don't know how much the landscape will have changed by June 2015. The biggest releases from now till then on the PS4 are a Last of Us remaster, maybe Bloodborne? Who knows?
Yeah.
And the Order 1886, which is filmic and has one ending, as we've discovered today.
Filmic. Well, you know, films only have one ending. It's not
Clue.
Well, yeah, I was about to bring up Clue, and, you know, no one has attempted that again. But it's not like you can have multiple endings. It's not like a make-your-own-adventure book. Come on. You got to get adult here with this video game nonsense. We got to move to films.
I saw someone point out the comparison that The Witcher 3 has 36 endings. So,
I mean, like, they're probably all going to be based around one ending of, like, Geralt wins and various other people die.
Which lady he fucks at the end? Which of the 36 women?
I'm going to bet at least, like, because, okay, so Witcher 3 is going to be about Geralt discovering or finding the people of the Wild Hunt, the demons that, you know, occasionally just hunt people. And they took his wife a long time ago. So I'm calling it now that the ending is going to involve him sleeping with his wife again, and then later sleeping again with Triss.
I just am assuming that he's just going to bang every lady in that game.
Well, that too. That's going to happen.
Like, in the story, for story reasons.
I mean, maybe. In Witcher 2, you only... I think Triss banging was the only story-related one. And then everyone else was just sort of along the way.
Just in my mind, it's going to be how they gate progress, like Stars in Mario 64. You just, like, need to bang 80 women to get through this door.
It's kind of interesting. Like, I was thinking about sex in video games recently. Like, I'm really dreading how BioWare is going to talk about next-gen sex scenes, because they're going to. It's gonna be part of the marketing process. And I'm gonna be incredibly squicked out by everything they say.
Well, maybe now they can't...
Oh, I was gonna say, maybe it'll still just be next-gen dry humping as the camera moves off to the side.
I'd say they can't do a whole lot, because now Kinect isn't included with every Xbox One.
But every system does have a headset, so... Maybe something bad's going to happen regardless. But they're going to be like, oh, we're going to try to handle this really artistically. And then I'm going to show, like, say, like, oh, well, now you can see the freckles on the Asari skin. Or something like that. And, like, you compare it to something like Dragon Guard 3, where sex is, like, the central idea of that game. Like, everyone just treats that thing casually, but it's always shown off. Like, there's nothing about it that's ever on screen. Like, the most I've ever seen is that there's a character that's, he's a masochist. And the main character, Zero, tells him, make sure you wash front and back. And then he lets out a pleasure groan. And that's, like, the closest that game ever gets to sexual explicity, I guess. And that somehow makes it more mature than most every BioWare sex scene I've ever seen.
I can't think of... I don't know, I think the only time I ever had sex with anyone in a BioWare game was Mass Effect 2? I think it's...
This is going to sound like bragging, but every BioWare game has always ended in some sort of sex scene for me. Or not ended, but climaxed, I guess.
They had the climax three ways through the game. Three different climaxes.
My Shepard was always just like a raging space lesbian.
There was that time in Mass Effect 3 where my Shepard was, like, really close to being gay for some reason, and it was totally on accident. Like, I was having that conversation with,
Freddie
Prinze Jr.
Vega, or whatever his name is.
Yeah. And, like, I was encouraging him, like, yeah, you know, just go for the Spectre missions. Like, try and be a Spectre. And then at some point, it's like, it came disturbingly close to Shepard just asking if he wanted to bang.
You know what the problem was there? You broed out too hard. It's always a danger. You gotta lay back on my brewing just a little bit.
I think it's a good idea to have bisexual characters. I just think there should be like a clear line of like, okay, by the way, you're romancing this person now.
Like, I think it makes perfect sense to have this. I think it becomes an issue when it becomes a thing that the game points out. You know, it's just weird that that they think it's something to brag about. And of course, now it becomes titillation at some point, right? It's just something in their character background.
It's the weird thing with Mass Effect, because everything's so binary, that encouragement and coming on to someone are the same thing, which is sort of like, it's the way that people get the wrong idea about relationships in the first place. Like, if you put in enough kindness coins, sex will fall out.
Right.
And I don't know, like, I'm not saying Mass Effect is the downfall of society or anything, but it's not exactly handling it maturely.
I have reason to hope that the writers will handle that better, and they will see that it's traveling down the dangerous path of being a ladder theory situation or a nice guy situation. I have reason to suspect that will happen this time. I hope.
Well, we'll see, because Dragon Age comes out really soon, and they have not played up the sex aspect of that game at all, which is good, I guess. Like, they haven't played up much of that aspect of that game besides the hero trees.
Yeah, I was going to say, have they played up the game aspect of that game at all?
There was that woman with the cello in that trailer, because she played the Dragon Age 3 main theme, which I guess is
a beloved video game score. Yeah,
something we should know. Like, the only music I really know is, did Jesper Kidd do it? Then, yeah, I can believe that's from a Western game, and I'll probably like it. But otherwise, it's like, I don't know who this is, and don't care until I have an emotional attachment to that music. All right, so Steam sale.
Yes.
I know we talked about this last week. Was there any more damage on anyone's end?
My damage didn't get talked about, but...
Okay, yeah. Why don't we get a full rundown for you?
Okay. Out of pocket, I bought Naruto Shippuden Ultimate Ninja Storm 3. Obviously, is the same burst at the end of it?
There's a burst at the end, yes.
Okay, of course. That does not show up in the Steam. So, that was out of pocket, and then for the rest of the sale, I basically subsisted off some of that sweet, sweet card cheddar. So, I got DLC for Castle Crashers and Borderlands.
Oh, yeah, we both bought the Borderlands. They sell a DLC pack, which, like, I guess it has other things, but very explicitly, like, the reason you buy it is because raises the level cap.
It has, like, five more versus arenas or something that nobody has ever used in Borderlands ever.
Yeah, it's a thing where they're like, oh, well, no, we know that people want this one thing, so we're just going to package it with something that's shitty.
This is what prevented me from buying anything Borderlands 2 related. Like, I wanted the DLC. I wanted the DLC that everyone was going to play, but the package was so comprehensive that I'm pretty sure I was buying the base game, like, at least three different occasions in buying this package. So I just stayed away.
Imran and I actually talked about this when we were talking about getting this. I have the prediction that the Borderlands 3 is going to come with one character, and every other character will be $15. That is my prediction for Borderlands 3. You thought it would come with four and there'd just be a bunch of add-ons.
I think that's a bridge too far. I think they need to keep it at par with Borderlands 2 and have those four characters, and then they're going to sell all the old Vault Hunters for $15 a pop.
They're just going to go full crazy in my mind, and it's just going to turn into like a League of Legends situation.
Well, if it's a League of Legends situation, they just give it to you for free and then just randomize.
Well, they'll
still
charge you like $30 for the game. Yeah. But yeah.
Though I suspect before too long, we'll see a Borderlands MOBA.
Yeah.
Like Final Fantasy VIII, Battle Block Theater, and SteamWorld Dig. And then as gifts, I got Double Dragon and Far Cry 3.
Oh, yeah, I bought you Double Dragon.
Yeah, we should play that.
Yeah, we're going to bro that out.
Yeah.
Mark, you own Double Dragon.
I own Double Dragon.
I saw you going on a roller coaster of emotions with it this past week.
Okay, so number one, as long as you're cool with Double Dragon Neon pandering the fuck out of you, you're going to be all right with it because
I'm
it pan-
super cool with that.
Okay, it panders the fuck out of you.
I have never played a Double Dragon game.
You don't have to play a Double Dragon game, which is the weird thing about it. It's like I never had a lot of affection for Double Dragon. Like, I like Final Fight, I like Streets of Rage, I like whatever SNK was putting out. That's about it. I never really got into Double Dragon or Battletoads or any of that crap. So when it comes up with a bo-bo-bo-bo-bo, I'm not really saying, oh my god, this is amazing. That's, whatever, he's there. It's a competent little fighting game. The guy moves a little slow, which is annoying, but I think that's just a Double Dragon thing. It's kind of deliberate. The big issue is that the game doesn't become interesting until you level up for a while, which is an issue I think I found with a lot of like Wave 4 games recently. What was the Scott Pilgrim video game that came out?
A lot of that.
Scott Pilgrim versus the Universe versus the World.
It's versus the World, but I can't remember who made it.
I thought it was just like a small team.
It was, but it has that same issue where it's like it's a very enjoyable little beat 'em up, but there's a very narrow window. It's like it's not enjoyable at the start because you're too low powered. It's very enjoyable in the middle, and it's not enjoyable again because you're probably a little bit overpowered. So right in the middle 2 hours, it is great. And then you find the final boss, and holy shit, is that the biggest pile of bullshit I have seen in a video game in a long while. I hate bosses. You guys know I hate bosses. The listeners know I hate bosses. Double Dragon Neon's bosses is the reason I hate bosses. Go and play this. I don't need a thesis. I say, Double Dragon Neon. Go
out there. That would be great. Imagine the bubble theme the entire time.
Bubble Neon.
God, that would be amazing. Please make this video game next week for it, but please leave the leveling and bosses out of it. Get to the final fight in Double Dragon Neon. And I will... Huh?
Sorry. I said Final Fight Neon.
Final Fight Neon would also... I don't think there's any game you can't improve from the 80s that wouldn't be better with Neon at the end.
Because, like, from what I've seen in Double Dragon Neon, it just takes all that stupid 80s stuff and just pushes it into 11. Like, there's a pagoda that launches into space.
Yes, that is amazing. You find, like, whenever you're leveling up, like, your level up things are like little cassette tapes that you collect. But it's like, there's some weird thematic elements. It's like, okay, you find a baseball bat, and, like, Billy and whoever... The other guy who isn't Billy, so he gives a Jimmy? Fuck if it's not Billy. Yeah, okay. Jimmy. Okay, it's not Billy, so nobody knows who it is. But, like, he'll get a baseball bat, and, like, he'll, like, wail on somebody's head with it and say, touchdown! It's like, no, Billy. I know Billy. Billy would understand sports. Billy would understand that's a home run or a triple or whatever. He wouldn't do stupid shit like that. I don't know, a lot of the jokes are just dumb and just, like, trying to be clever for the sake of clever. It wears out its welcome on that kind of quick, but, I mean, it's good for a couple of days, and then you probably don't want to ever go back to it.
By the way, Mark, I have to tell you, because it came up and it's so perfectly circular, the developer of Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, the game, is, we said it was, like, a small developer. It is a small developer called Ubisoft.
Oh, my God. That's the second time they fooled us with that and that, actually, a third time full. Child of Light and Valiant Hearts.
Vandal Hearts is the SRPG from the PS1.
That the one that really porno. Cool section.
Where you do what now?
There's like one of those games where you like find gay porn and trade it to somebody.
That is Shadow Hearts.
Okay.
For the PS2, Shadow Hearts 2 technically, where you find gay porn for the doll makers, so they make dresses for your dolls.
Yeah, that one.
It sounds perfectly logical.
And then there's Vagrant Heart, which was that little-known strategy RPG by Konami for the PlayStation 1.
And then there was Vagrant Story, that piece of shit. Ugh.
So I get
Vagrant Story wasn't a piece of shit. Come on.
It was pretty bad.
Which one was Vagrant Story?
It's the Matsuno one that, like, Ashley Riot, guy who wore assless chaps.
It's the one that looks bad and plays bad.
It's the first Ivalus story. Okay.
Yeah.
So I've not heard good things about Valiant Hearts. Like, I've heard that like it starts off as really morose World War I, like not everyone's gonna survive kind of thing, and then at some point becomes Looney Tunes.
That's good. That's terrific.
The common complaint is that it's writing, I'm not sure how to phrase this, but it's like it's writing story checks that their writing can't cash. You know, like, they're acting like it's way more important and deep and meaningful, and then they just kind of do nothing with it and fumble it.
Let's remember the central premise of this game. A dog is going through the trenches in World War II.
I don't think that's not really the premise. World War I, think that's their
framing device.
Yeah, all that's, of it just seems... Yeah. Talking to people who have played it, it just all sounds like super by-the-books manipulative. You know, like, of course, you know, the dog's gonna die. That's why they put the dog in the game, so they can kill it and make you feel bad and think the game's deep.
So what if Valiant Hearts is actually The Last Guardian?
I did just confuse
me. It came out. It's a video game, by all accounts. So
I've been wondering because I've because you remember the Frog Fractions 2 Kickstarter, right? Mm-hmm. Where the guy said Frog Fractions 2 will come out as some other game this year. Maybe you'll be able to figure out what it is. So I've been looking at like every game and trying to figure out what that could possibly be. Still no luck. But
I stand by my guess of The Division because it's really funny. It's a pun.
Yes. It does make really a lot of sense.
So the rest of the damage that was done. Mercenary Kings played a bit of it.
I played the fuck out of that game.
So I didn't super enjoy it.
So does it ever get more maps? Because I've seen three. I've played this game for 6 hours and I've seen three maps.
You get like six maps? Seven?
But they're all functionally the same.
Yeah, it's different tile sets.
Yeah. Like that I don't know. Part of my problem is I feel like that game is just, it's just on the bad side of MMO quests.
You hit a tipping point. What I found is, like, I hated it early on, and then you make a broken gun, and then the game is actually fun. Because you've just totally broken the game, and you're just, like, mowing. Enemies are not a problem anymore. I mean, me and Robin, who guests on the Jumpcast sometimes, we co-op that game a bunch. We could kill bosses, like, 10 seconds, sometimes less.
I mean, that part seems, like, I co-oped with you guys once, and, like, you guys all ran off somewhere, and I was, like, fighting one guy, and then it just, like, mission complete!
Yep.
Huh.
The final boss, we could just kill him before, like, he could even attack us. And we went through the game using just the basic pistol. It's pretty great.
Yeah, not really seeing the appeal in any of the things you just said.
I think it takes a certain type of person to enjoy.
Like, I think if you liked Monster Hunter, you would like that game more, but it feels like it's Monster Hunter without the barrier of entry to skill.
I don't know, I have a problem with people comparing it to Monster Hunter and Contra, because I don't think it really plays like either of those. It just seems like really lazy, superficial comparisons.
Well, the part of the problem is the original comparison, I think it was in the Kickstarter too, This is a lot like Metal Slug. And it's like, okay, this is nothing like Metal Slug. It's 2D and you shoot guns, but otherwise Metal Slug is like a very particular, defined game of like running gun shooting.
Well, it's also like it has the cutesy pixel art, chunky pixel art.
Well, there was a point when it was a little more than Metal Slug. I think I played it at 2012 PAX, just before the Kickstarter, maybe even. And yeah, that's all it was. But at that point, it was probably just a demo. I mean, it was just a proof of concept. Yeah. Hey, we can make this game. These guys run, the guns shoot, it works. And that is all it was.
Yeah.
I think so it just evolved.
So did they have like the same map? Did you notice like if that had improved at all? Or?
Oh, no. I mean, it was that memory is so far away.
Okay.
Yeah. All I can remember is you jumped, and all I can remember is thinking, wow, they made Metal Slug.
See, my thing, when I think of Metal Slug, I think of a giant monster chasing you down while you shoot it, while Mercenary Kings is you chasing down a giant monster to shoot it for a while.
Yeah.
And, like, that dichotomy it seems really important.
I see the appeal. Like, I like everything about this video game, aside from the point where you go off and have the gameplay parts to it. Everything else, I think, could have been put into an amazing video game.
Yeah.
This, you play for the first, like, 30 minutes, and basically you see everything. And that's a shame, because I really want to love this video game.
So, Paul Robertson games are getting, you know, trashed on this podcast today.
Yeah, they are. Hey, it's not his fault.
No.
Looking it up, I put 30 hours into that game.
Jeez.
So
how much of that was idling for cards?
None.
Because now I have like a bunch of hours on games that I've never played.
Speaking of which, I own Battle Block Theater. Never played an hour of Battle Block Theater, but I have all the cards for Battle Block Theater, so I'm terrible. Also bought Shovel Knight. I don't know if we want to have that discussion yet. I'm not sold on it.
Let's go for it. Mike, sell him on it.
Okay, I've completed it. It's really good. What don't you like about it?
I specifically don't like this one area I'm experiencing right now where you're on these moving platforms and the lights are turning on and off, and this just seems unreasonably sadistic.
This is Spectre Knight's
second level. Okay.
The Spectre Knight area. This does not seem like fun. If like the game is full of more of this, I'm just going to walk away.
That's
I like
the only
idea.
Place I've seen it use that gimmick, but it's not too bad.
Just
like,
take it slow. You jump like a few pixels and then wait for the lights to come on and see about where you are.
Well, I've done this, and there was this one platform that has like the giant metal helmet on this, because one of the gameplay elements is like, for some reason, there's dudes with giant metal helmets, and you kill them, and like their giant metal helmet pushes down the platform.
They're used later on for like weighing platforms.
It's a good element, yeah. But this element shows up in the moving platform elements when the lights are going on and off. I didn't realize this, and I basically just hung out on this platform as it was slowly sinking in the darkness to my death. And then the lights come on right before I die, and I realize, well, I'm never going to get back up in time. Fuck this video game. I'm going to play some Double Dragon Neon.
I forget if... Do you have the magic fireballs yet?
No, I do not.
It depends on if he goes to King Knight's.
King Knight's level has those.
Okay.
And I think those are still visible even when the game is silhouetted.
Okay. That'd be so nice.
Are they?
I don't know. No. I didn't have any problem with the black and white section.
I mean, I'm mostly just deductive reasoning my way through.
You're just like, it's built in a way that you just kind of YOLO right through it. And just like, everything's spaced apart, so you just run and jump.
Here's my theory on the flashing like levels. This was a gameplay element that was specifically dropped right after the NES. Like, it never showed up ever again. I never played the NES. I went straight from like the 2600 into like the Genesis and SNES, right? I never played through this shit before. This is the first time I'm seeing it. And I don't have like the 8-year-old me's version of things where I'm just willing to power through it because I don't have anything better to do. I'm looking at this and seeing this is bullshit. It is unreasonably sadistic. Fuck you, video game.
And if you... Okay. You might want to stop there then, because that game gets kind of just mean by the end of it.
I think it's all fair because it gives you that Dark Souls thing of, well, you lose your treasure and just come back and get it if you need to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also you get, just through the course of playing the game, not even looking, you get like so much more treasure than you ever need to buy stuff.
Especially if you're fighting the optional bosses on the world map.
Yeah.
Like, one of them is Baz from Divekick.
Yeah, and the other three are presumably guest characters, too.
I fought a ninja, but I couldn't recognize where he was from.
And there's Mr. Hat, and then there's...
I've heard Beck and Shantae are in the game.
I don't know that Shantae... I haven't seen Shantae.
Meh. I could see them not putting her in, but I know I've seen art of, like, Shovel Knight, Beck, and Shantae together, so I assumed.
So the thing I really like about Shovel Knight is that it's an 8-bit game that does not seem to particularly lean on any inspirations. It kind of becomes its own thing.
It's super Capcom NES game.
Right.
I mean, like, you say it doesn't lean on any inspirations, but, like, the main mechanic is taken from DuckTales?
I didn't play DuckTales, so...
Oh, well, the Pogo Kane.
Right, yeah. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. But it does that well, and I think, like, the actual act of controlling it is probably better than Way Forward managed with DuckTales Remastered.
Yeah, because you have it on Wii U, right?
Yeah.
I have mostly played it on 3DS. I have it on Wii U also, but I haven't started it. Did you play it on PC, Mark?
Yeah, I played it on PC.
Okay. I'm just wondering how all the different versions compare, because it's really good as a 3DS game, I think.
The PC, it's like, it doesn't do anything remarkable. It's not going
like, to... It probably doesn't matter where you play that. I heard that 3DS is the worst version, but not, like, bad. Because, I mean, obviously, it's lowest resolution, and if you don't like the controls, there's not much you can do about it.
It's the lowest resolution of a pixel art game.
Yeah.
It's a certain resolution, and... Anyway.
Yeah, I'm just trying to decide on what platform to get it on. I'm trying to clear some of my game playing schedule for Shovel Knight right now, so...
I will say, if you only have a 360 controller, I wouldn't bother with the PC version.
So is this not going to get, like, a Vita version at all?
They've said they're thinking about that stuff after. Now that they ship the game, they can worry about ports and that stuff.
No, they have to finish Mac and Linux first. Those are
Mac and Linux, and then I guess also they're going to have a team work on the DLC.
Yeah, they need to get the stuff they promised out first. But they're doing the right thing, where it's not like, you know, they're not just taking off because they have money and doing whatever. They're fulfilling what they promised the Kickstarter people first, and then going on from there.
Well, I think you have to. If it's your first Kickstarter game, and you plan to make this your, like, studio plan from here forward, you probably need to, like, you know, make sure everyone's happy. Because you want those Kickstarter backers to come back next time and be like, yeah, I love Shovel Knight, and they did everything I said they would. So.
Nintendo has latched onto them really, like, they've been promoting the hell out of Shovel Knight. Like,
yeah, it was on the Treehouse stream, I think, which probably helped a lot, because I saw a bunch of people saying, like, oh, I wasn't really interested in this game until I saw it there, now I want it.
It's also the top thing on the eShop right now, and at Japan Expo in France, which I always find weird.
What?
Japan Expo, the thing that they have every year where they show games. Shovel Knight's going to be at Nintendo's booth among, like, Yarn Yoshi and Hyrule Warriors and stuff.
Wow.
It's, like, one of the main games they're showing.
Has anyone seen the soundtrack for this? You can actually play it back on Nintendo hardware, on NES hardware.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's using the NSF file format, so you can actually play it back on a tracker, like Famitracker, or on actual hardware.
Yeah, the music is perfect to the NES. Like, it is an accurate reproduction. The graphics are slightly above what an NES could do.
Well, I was reading a breakdown of it. Like, the developer actually talked about, like, their decisions when they're trying to make the game. And they tried to get it as close to the NES as possible. Their big issue was that they didn't want to put Flickr in the game. And there's just no way for the NES to handle as much stuff as on the screen without, like, a crippling amount of Flickr.
Yeah.
So they avoided that. I think they said that the way they did colors is it's more colors than a NES could handle, but not by a huge degree. Yeah.
It has 18 colors when the NES could do 16 or something like that.
I think it was more in the 50s?
Something.
It was a palette of 50 with, like,
it's 18 sprites is how many the NES can handle. And as somebody that, like, has been recording NES games recently and recording them in 30 frames per second, the lack of flicker is really nice. Because there's times where, like, things will just totally disappear on my videos. I'm like, shit.
Yeah.
It's on the wrong frame interval, huh?
Some of those, and you're just fighting phantom enemies that I can't see.
Like, he's not on a platform at all. He's just floating. Oh.
Yeah. I wonder how that works now that you mention it, because that had to be an issue with, like, Summer Games Done Quick or any of those other stream marathons, right? I mean,
capture it at 60.
Oh, okay.
So it'll only be skip any frames, yeah.
It'd only be an issue then. Okay. But yeah, something that they could probably, like, using, like, the weird, like, special NES chips that would ship sometimes, they could put that on NES.
I remember when, after they launched Kickstarter, and they were like, people were asking, oh, can we put flash these onto reproduction cards? They're like, no, it's not going to run a Nintendo system. And people were pissed. It's like, I'd rather just have the game they want to make, even if it's, like, just inspired by the NES instead of, actually runs on one.
That's what they ended up with, was, like, a game that clearly has inspiration from the NES, but still kind of stands as its own game. You don't have to look through the filter of, like, oh, they were working with the constraints of the NES, so good job.
So I've seen some people complain about the fact that they immediately introduced Shield Knight in the game, and then seconds later they fridge her, basically.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, she vanishes, and that makes it despondent. It's obvious what's going to happen.
Yeah, that goes places in the story.
Okay, like, so she, yeah. I just figured, but, like, I can see how people get upset about that, like, oh, here's your first female character, also, by the way, now she's dead.
Well, I mean, there's probably going to be a play as her, and there's supposed to be, like, a gender swap mode eventually.
People chose the worst bosses for the boss playable
mode. How do you not do Propeller Knight?
They did King Knight, was it?
King Knight's a good choice.
Poison Knight?
Yeah.
Plague Knight, that was it.
Plague Knight and Spectre Knight are the three that got picked.
Yeah, so basically, like, the first three.
And I don't know how you pass up on Polar Knight and Propeller Knight.
Or even Treasure Knight. He's a big daddy.
God, the worst.
Yeah, maybe they'll have more options later.
We learned this during the Steam sales, that people make the worst choices when presented with polls.
I don't know, yeah. I've been dead since Arcade Retro. Like, I'm just like, oh, whatever. Like, that one vote that was just utilities versus utilities, I could tell Valve was, like, just playing with people at that point. Yeah. So, Dave, what damage did you incur?
Let's see. I think I had a more productive second half than first half. I'll just read them off, because I haven't played any of them, and I probably won't for a while.
That's just part of the Steam sale.
Yeah. So. Okay, let's see. Call of Juarez, Gunslinger.
That's a good game.
Yeah.
Splinter Cell Blacklist.
Also, I ended up dipping on that, but haven't played it yet.
Yeah, probably won't touch for a while. Delver, which is a first-person... Yeah, I played it pre-Steam release, but I haven't. They did a graphical pass on it and a bunch of stuff since I last played it.
I haven't played it lately, but I bought it shortly after it was up on Steam because it was on sale, and I looked at it like, yeah, that sounds like something cool, and it's cool. After playing it, I thought, like, I'm gonna wait till this is done before I play it again.
Yeah, and that was my feeling. Yeah, when I played it, you know, where it was beta or alpha or whatever it was before Steam, it wasn't even early access yet. It was, this is gonna be good or better. Eventually, let me wait a few months. SteamWorld Dig, which I hear such good things about that game. I've almost purchased it on 3DS like three times.
Yeah.
Let's see. Dishonored? I'm kind of catching up in the Steam sale. On, you know, this is sort of the Steam sale where some of this stuff like Blacklist and Dishonored, they're finally hitting like the $5 mark.
Right. Dishonored is surprisingly great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's, I've been really, really anxiously anticipating the price lower, hit the market. And, you know, then I gotta find time to play it. But
there was a price mistake, I think, last year that was like Dishonored GOTY Edition for like $3.
Yep. Yeah. I heard about that, jumped on, and it was fixed by the time I
got it.
Yeah.
And still haven't played it. So.
I started it. I don't like it, but.
Let's see. Both Paydays, which I have both on the PlayStation 3, but I don't play shooters on the PlayStation 3. So
yeah.
Shadowrun, the DLC for the game, which I haven't played the game, but I expect to like it. So I figured the DLC will pay off.
That's a dangerous thing when you start buying DLC for games you never booted up. Like, oh, it's on sale. Maybe when I do want to boot up the game, I'll have this DLC there. And it's like, oh,
I have no doubt. I'm sure
it's been like 6 years. I still haven't touched this.
There were several things where I did. I passed up DLC that was on sale because of that exact reason. I haven't touched this game. I think I'll like it. I think I'll want the DLC, but Dishonored. Like, I'm sure I'm going to love this game, but I'm not going to get any of the DLC because I will probably never play it.
Yeah, I looked at the Saints Row 4 DLC page for a little while before coming to my senses and walking away.
Like, it's one of those things where, like, well, I don't want anything on sale, but I own Saints Row 4 and the DLC's on sale too, so maybe I'll do this? And I looked over the list, I was like, I don't know anything of this. And no one's ever talked about this DLC, so I don't know if it's good or bad, but the fact no one's ever talked about it doesn't encourage me.
You know, I wasn't aware that Shadowrun Dragonfall, the name of the expansion, existed. And I bought Shadowrun Returns without realizing this. And now I'm looking at this and really kind of pissed off that I didn't realize that this existed. I would have bought that for cheap and not the $14.
Now you have to wait till winter.
Yeah. Damn it. Well, there's a bunch of content for it.
Oh, yeah. And it's in the what do they call it? The workshop? Yeah. Workshop stuff, too. So I rounded it out with Stanley Parable and Dark Souls.
Also good games. I'm kind of surprised Dark Souls 2 didn't go on sale at all.
It is pretty recent.
Yeah, I mean, but too much. So was Transistor. And
I wanted it to go on sale because I wanted them to price mistake the season pass so we could get that for cheaper.
That's probably exactly why it didn't go on sale.
Yeah, they just stayed away from touching it.
Yeah, like there was something yesterday that was like State of Decay was on price mistake for a cent.
It was actually a negative 1 cent, so there was no way to buy it. When things are negative money, you can't get it.
Yeah, hopefully that credit cash.
I don't know. Even though I don't play Sonic All-Stars Racing Transformed anymore, I figured I'd just go ahead and buy the Ryo Hazuki DLC because, you know, maybe I will. Maybe when I do, I want to play as Ryo Hazuki on like a, what is it?
An Outrun
machine.
Yeah.
I bought Splinter Cell Blacklist. I bought that Borderlands level cap DLC. I got gifted Transistor, and Transistor is like so fucking cool.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, I kind of zoned out when you guys were talking about it a couple of weeks ago. Because I was like, I'm probably going to play this game eventually, but not anytime soon. And now I'm playing it. Like, so I played Bastion this past week, too. And I started and finished that game.
I don't want to say the hype for Bastion, but did you see why people love Bastion, especially you did?
I
think Mike didn't quite.
I feel like it is a
very, very much the child of that era of downloadable games.
Okay.
Like, sure. It is very expansive for that time, but you look at it now, it's like, there's not a whole lot to this game here.
Diablo and not with, like, great design for Diablo.
My problem with it was that, like, I recognize that a lot of work was put into how it looks and plays. I just didn't really like either. So.
I wanted it to be more of an action game, I think, because I think, like, those special abilities, they should have just not made those consumable things. They should have made them, like, part of your ability to combo. Because at some point, once you upgrade the hammer all the way, nothing matters. Well, I have a hammer and a musket, and nothing can touch me, so...
The special I would always take is the one where you make the little Goomba enemy, whatever the...
Squirt. Smallest
one. Yeah, the squirt. Where you could just make those, and I just never stopped using that. Because you throw one down, and all the enemies just totally de-aggro off you, and you just stand there and hit them in the back. Like, nothing is a problem when you have that.
Yeah. So I like Bastion as experience, but... I didn't think like it was necessarily the best game. Mm-hmm. Like, again, a product of that era. But Transistor is totally... It fixes everything I disliked about Bastion. It's way more technical, mm-hmm. way more strategic. The world is built way better.
Yeah, I love the world. I don't think I've seen a game play like Transistor.
Yes. It's like, it has that ARPG kind of thing, but it's not actually an ARPG. Like, you only do that when you're out of options. But for the most part, you do arrange those turn-based moves as quickly as you can, and then try and hide. Like, I don't think I really understood that game until that first boss fight against, God, I don't remember her name, but the female enemy.
Right.
And yeah. She, like, that was like, oh, I see exactly what I'm doing wrong here. And I love the death system, because like Bastion was way too lenient about that. You had all those healing systems or healing bottles, and then presumably you put the one extra chance thing in the brewery, so you had three chances to die and completely recover. And then Transistor, what they do is if you die, you lose one of your moves until you visit enough terminals.
And I think it's way more difficult. Like once you die, you basically need to reload.
Yeah,
once
you either. Just reload or try and fight through it, and like, I've only lost one, and I put so much damage to this character or enemy that, like, I can find two terminals pretty easily. Then you get to the next one, I was like, oh shit, why is my move not working? Oh right, I overloaded it. And it's really smart. It's a very smart way to fix that problem that they had with Bastion. But like, more than anything, just the graphics and sound in that game, I am absolutely in love with
it. Like, it is legitimately like, it's probably one of the best looking games I've ever played, and it doesn't do like a lot. It's not like graphically, it's not like technically amazing like Bioshock Infinite was. Just the art style and what it does with the hardware it has is just stunning.
Like that first time you come upon a poster of Red and like advertising a concert.
Yeah.
And it shows you that full picture, and it's just the sword apologizes like, Red, I'm sorry. Like this shouldn't have happened. And like, it does a much better job than Rux did in Bastion of selling that world.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, Transistor is I should really play more of that. I just haven't had time the last couple of days, but like the time I have played has been amazing. I apparently own Adventures of Shuggy, which I think is that game they were giving away for free.
Yeah, the developer was giving it away for free as a promotion for their new game.
As I was watching SGDQ, I saw Noi2Love 2. And that game looked really cool, so I decided to play it, and it's actually pretty cool.
Yeah, it's really great. Yeah.
What is that?
It is a action platformer where the action part is controlled with your mouse.
Yeah.
It's like a mouse cursor.
It's a lot of fun. And that guy is making another game right now called Iconoclasts, I think. Yeah, Iconoclasts. And that one looks like everything that Noi2Love is, plus, you know, so much more. It is kind of his magnum opus. He's been working on it for like 3 years.
Oh wow, it looks great.
It is both of those games from him, just amazing stuff. I mean, he's really.
So I didn't realize what the title meant until I like actually had it in my Steam library, and then I saw the word Devolution next to it. I was like, oh, I get it now. It's Evolution backwards. Yeah. So I won Sanctum 2, but I haven't played it yet. I bought Long Live the Queen because why the hell not? Like, well, let's see what that game is about. Well, maybe I'll let's play it and put it online. Defy Gravity was 30 cents, and I made 45 cents off it in cards.
Nice.
And it's actually not a bad game. It's like, I wouldn't play it for a long time, but it's sort of like, it does with gravity stuff what Portal did with Portals. And just 2D and low budget.
Yeah, it's a neat little cheap game.
I bought Cloud Built, which, as it turns out, is anime Mirror's Edge.
That doesn't sound too bad.
It's not bad. It's just, it's really, there's a very Quap-like thing to the controls where, like, there's so many buttons I'm using. They're like, oh god, what should I be dashing here? And it takes itself really serious. Okay, so the main conceit of this game is you are the consciousness of a, I don't feel comfortable saying child soldier, but because it's anime, so it might not be a child soldier, but a soldier girl who was injured in a bomb blast. And her consciousness is being reconstructed through AI. And the levels you're going through are that reconstruction process.
Interesting.
And it's like, I just want to dash on things and, you know, move. Don't throw this at me, game. But it's interesting. I don't know. It's a parkour game, and it plays like if Sonic had platforming.
Is it first person or behind the back or what?
Behind the back. And there's like lots of dashing and double jumps and like a energy meter. The only thing I don't like about it is that there's enemies, and for the most part they can be avoided, but not always. And sometimes I'll be like, oh, I'm getting really good momentum here. I'm going along, and then all of a sudden, like, whoops, got shot and got knocked down.
And then you pick up their gun, right? And then you just...
You do down. Have a gun.
Oh, that's a shame.
You can destroy enemies, but you don't necessarily have to.
Sure, you don't have to, but you will, because it's easier.
I saw a quote from Dice the other day that Mirror's Edge 2 was going to focus more, or have more improvements in first-person fighting.
That's what I wanted to hear.
I guess if you have to put it in there, at least make it better.
Just make it like Xenoclash.
Sure. Or just make it like... The only thing I did in Mirror's Edge was I'd always run at people, then do the dive thing. And, like, then just take their gun and run away.
Sure.
But, like, you don't need to expand it beyond that. Just make it easier to disarm them quickly and then run.
Or trying to
just get rid of guns entirely.
I feel like there was this game where you disarmed enemies and then, like, just immediately, like, took their gun apart. You know, did the thing where you, like, slide it back and it falls apart.
I feel like I've seen that animation too, but I can't remember.
Yeah, but you should just do that. Like, knock them down, and then they're knocked out, and you just slide the gun apart and keep moving.
Yeah, and they don't have time to put that back together despite being trained soldiers.
Well, it's a video game, so they're just sleeping forever.
And I also bought Broforce.
All right. Excellent. Did you play Broforce?
I did play Broforce, and for the most part, I like it. But I feel like there are situations where I rescue somebody, and then I get someone that sucks.
Yes, that's exactly how Broforce works.
Like, I'll be like, oh man, I'm doing really well as Rambro. And then all of a sudden, like, oh shit, I got B.A. Broroccus.
No, number one, B.A. Broroccus is awesome because he sets fire to things.
But he doesn't jump as far.
I don't know if... I think the jumping and movement are the same across all characters, I think.
Maybe, because I feel like I was able to make jumps as Rambro that I wasn't able to make as him.
I think you might be more confident because you can just shoot things. But that's actually the basic gameplay element of it. Let's say you start off with like a really great character that you do super well with. Well, now if you collect any of the cages, then you're going to lose this really great character you're super comfortable with. And chances are you're going to die. And if you die without having saved anybody, of course, then the game ends. That's basically how the game works. You sit there and you basically have to learn all the dudes, all the bros, and see what situations they work in, because ultimately you can get them to work in all situations, regardless of which bro you're using.
They force you to get good with everybody.
Yeah, or there's going to be some situations where you say, okay, I can actually use this guy's weird skill set to my advantage here.
Yeah, well, the good thing is in boss fights where somebody like Blade or somebody just wouldn't work, there's almost always a cage somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, there's always a decent amount of cages in those areas,
So there are only a couple of times where there are literally bros that just can't do this fight. I think the chopper fight is really hard. The first little chopper fight with like Neo or one of the melee guys. So
Blade works out well because he's got the dash.
The dash just decimates everything. But you look around a little bit, you find another cage, you get, RoboCop or whatever. RoboCop.
RoboCop. And then it's over because there's no better hero than RoboCop.
See, that's part of the game design, but it's just like, oh, well, I want to look at this cage, and maybe it's someone I haven't unlocked yet, but on the other hand, I've gotten someone that I have a really good chance of finishing the rest of the stage off with. So...
And the game is a lot more puzzly than you'd really expect, because it seems like you're just going through and just tearing through shit. It's like, no, because like most of the level can be destroyed, then you can, like, find routes that just pass people, or basically just like tear apart their flooring and just kill them from underneath, which is always fun. Just an enormous amount of pixels going everywhere with the explosions.
I did like my favorite thing was I was in this level that was like most like the last part of it was just like a vertical tower essentially, and at the very bottom was one of those like things you shoot and it just like rockets up the entire way.
Yep.
So I shot that and like destroyed the entire tower all the way up.
Yep.
Like, yep, that's totally appropriate, and I love the fact that happened. It's a really good game.
What a stupid game.
I want to play it online at some point.
Try multiplayer. Yeah, Brian and I tried it. It's great.
I was so tempted by it during the sale. That's the one that I came the closest to getting.
I played just a ton of, like, just this new wave retro stuff that's basically just coming out this year. It's like everything, like, kind of like the old school, like, design elements coming back, and definitely pixel art, but...
I feel like... I feel like the first big one of that was Hotline Miami. started this. Like, it's pixel art, but fuck it.
I tried to play that game recently, and I had a headache before I started to play, turned out to be the worst idea I've ever had.
Just, like, go drop some acid and then start playing it, and you'll be fine.
That's a conceit of the game, right? Like, you're super high on coke?
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. You're probably killing innocent people, but, you know, whatever. You're super high on coke. Yeah. Sadly, my Hotline Miami game, I don't care what happens, I've reinstalled it on different machines. Like, I get through, like, the last set of maps, and halfway through the last set of maps, it just completely blue screens, and there's no way around it. Yeah, they've never patched this out. It happens on some accounts, and you can't do anything about it.
That's a bummer, because the back half of that game is pretty awesome. The stuff that you pull off.
Really, it's really heartbreaking, but the stuff in the series is great. I'm just really enjoying what they're doing right now with that. Just, I don't know, it seems like it's in an alternate universe where we never got past, like, the SNES. And just, like, and we're just, like, improving on, like, the gameplay elements instead of going forward with any, like, technical improvements.
I mean, yeah, it works out pretty nice, but I don't know. We'll see what happens, because Shovel Knight, I think, was, like, the last really big NES nostalgia game that's coming, or that was announced.
Yeah. And there is that dangerous, like, is this a good video game because it's a good video game, or was it a good video game because of the nostalgia factor?
Well, you know, the next wave of nostalgia is not the NES or the SNES. Like, in an interview today, the Shovel Knight people said their idea for the next game is something like Shovel Knight 64.
I've heard that, actually. Like, the number N64 stuff generally sells the best with resellers, because the people who have all this, like, expendable income and want to go relive their childhood are the 20-year-olds that played the N64 when they were kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I saw went into a game store that had a complete package for Hey You Pikachu with the microphone and everything, and I almost bought it because you never see that microphone.
Well, the big issue with, like, how they're going to do the retro stuff, it's like the NES stuff, it looked bad, but it was still playable, and it had a definitive art style that you make work with. And of course, everything with the Genesis and SNES looked really nice. And, like, you could get to the N64 stuff, and it started looking nice again, but there's this huge chunk with, like, the PlayStation 1 and Saturn stuff where everything looked like garbage. And it's not even, like, a good art style form of garbage. It's just garbage that you don't want to go back to ever again. So there's a lot of, like, gameplay elements that we're probably not going to ever go back to because of that.
Yeah, like, I don't know, when people show me, like, oh, well, I love this old PS1 art style, mm-hmm. It's like, the PS1 didn't look like this. Like, you can clearly make out what this is. That wasn't the case on the PS1. Like, this is totally an astronaut. Yeah. And on the PS1, he would have been, like, a white blob.
Yeah, we were really making a lot of excuses. Like, look at Metal Gear Solid, this is amazing. And trying really hard to ignore the point where, like, Snake's face was, like, a single texture. Just horribly put on. And
well,
that's
the reason we end up relying on so much cinematics and CG and voice acting, was because everything else was just an abstract mess. It's like, oh, well, sure, it doesn't matter that Tifa looks different in all of these cutscenes. She at least looks discernible.
Yeah, there's, what, like, about 4 different character models for everyone in Final Fantasy VII?
I think that's because they ended up, like, just stitching a lot of that game together from a bunch of different studios, but our teams... But, like, I can think of at least 5 different examples of characters looking different. Because video games and the PS1.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. Like, I don't see that nostalgia coming back in full force, because, like, it's one thing to say we're going to make a game that's like an N64 platformer. It's another thing to actually make that game, because the N64 platformers were mostly terrible.
Yeah, but you hate Banjo, so...
I really hate Banjo.
For some reason.
I didn't... Like, I feel like it is the quintessential collect-a-thon game.
What are your opinions on Conker's Bad Fur Day?
I thought it was shitty.
Oh, God, there's...
I don't like Rare, and, like, after the SNES era, they just completely lost me. Even GoldenEye wasn't really too hot on. Like, GoldenEye, I liked playing multiplayer, but single player I thought was not fun.
I hope the audio of me shaking my head is getting picked up.
I mean, like, you look back at those games now, and they weren't doing things that other games weren't doing better. Like, would you honestly say that Banjo-Kazooie is a better platformer than, let's say, Mega Man X4?
Hell no.
Then, I mean, Why would we, like, we're celebrating its mediocrity.
Well, that was something else during that period when, like, developers were trying to figure out, like, 3D platforming. And occasionally they get it right perfectly, like with Mario 64 or with one of the Zelda games. But for the most part, people were just, like, going in there blind. And even at the time, we were trying to make excuses for it. Like, we knew full well, like, the 16-bit stuff just had better gameplay.
But we
also knew that in order for things to move forward, we had to, like, just, like, basically drink this bad medicine of, like, really floaty 3D platforming and just play our Crash Bandicoots for, like, a few years and get that through.
It is the fallacy of the present, basically, where, like, everything now is fine because it's better than it used to be. But we have, like, that old SCEA rule, the Sony Computer Entertainment of America rule, where they didn't want 2D games on the PS1 in America.
Yeah.
So they'd actively block them, and that caused issues with Capcom and caused lifelong rivalries with some people. But it didn't make any sense then, because really what we wanted was good game design, and that could have come from whatever. And it just...
Well, they were selling an image at that point in time. They weren't really concerned with selling you games. They were concerned with selling you the image that the PlayStation was the next thing, and 3D was the next thing. And you had to give up your baby games of your 2D Mario platformers. You had to move into the new scary world of Metal Gear.
Well, but enough about E3. Let's talk about the PS1 again.
Like, imagine how insane it would be if that, like, there's a new VR system and they said, all right, you can just can't bring over any game that doesn't take full advantage of VR. And that'd be super dumb, because I feel like we finally reached a point in industry where we recognize that games are video games. Maybe, like, we're not fully there. Like, you look at somebody broke down the story-based games in terms of approval ratings on Steam, and, like, let's say Kentucky Route Zero had lots of thumbs up and, like, a 90% approval rating, and Gone Home has, like, a 90% disapproval rating. Because people thought Gone Home was the antithesis of what they play video games for.
Right.
And, well, I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt, not assuming it's just not because it's about a lesbian girl. But
I think you're correct, though. I think, like, gaming is still a very clubbish sort of thing, and gamers are going to take a look at something like Gone Home and think that it is a threat, and think that, oh, but my 3D shooting game is under attack by this weird indie thing where I don't shoot anyone, and they feel like they have to react badly to that.
But, like, Gone Home, even though, like, it was well praised, I think it was... Was it our game of the year last year? It was, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was. It was because the last year before is also a bullshit story game, which is The Walking Dead. We have a bad habit of this.
It didn't prevent Last of Us from winning every other award everywhere else. Mm-hmm. So, the idea that expanding the definition of video games will narrow the definition
it's
stupid.
It's weird because we'll still accept bullshit where a developer will hand us something that's basically Gone Home, but if they put it in a different package. Like, you can see this happening right now with The Order. You can see everything. It's filmic. And everything about The Order looks amazing until you get to the point where it's a video game and it's just a bog-standard 3D. Of course, we haven't played it yet. Maybe it's amazing.
I don't want to judge it too harshly because, like, there's games that have made that, like, they've done amazing things by not being video games.
Yeah.
So we'll see if the way they're phrasing it is what scares me. It's not, you know, we're doing something interesting that, like, this is crossing the line between video game and visual novel. It's,
sure,
we're crossing the line between video game and movies that you can't tell the difference anymore. It's like, I don't think either of those things need to be the same thing.
Well, Here's my theory. It's like, you have a game like, and we're going to keep going back to Gone Home, because what the hell ever. But you had to go with Gone Home, and it's providing a very specific experience, a very specific story that can only possibly be told through a video game. And then you walk to something like apparently what's going on with The Order, and again, maybe it's an amazing video game, but right now it looks like this guy wanted to make a movie, and he's stuck with making a video game instead. Like, I hope that's not what's happening.
There's a quote from, like, Ready at Dawn. It's like, we can't get around that. And, like, that's the most worrying thing I've ever heard anyone say. Like you take Zero Escape 3, and then, like, Ushikoji would never say, we can't get around gameplay. He'll say, I'm not making a game that's about gameplay. I'm making a story. and you can make decisions in it. And Zero Escape and 999, like, those are great games.
Yeah. They actually play as video games.
Yeah. Like those are experiences that I would recommend to people. Yeah. But I don't know that Order is something that I can, like, just say, oh, you should buy a PS4 for this. Because that'd be stupid.
I don't know, but at some point we do have to reconcile a thing where we're fine with a certain subset of stories as video games that not actually video games. And then we have stuff like Heavy Rain, where we have stuff like Beyond Two Souls.
I'm fine with saying that I like stuff that's well executed. And yeah, that's the long and short of it. Like, David Cage stuff is not well executed.
I think it's fair. Sure.
Like, I know Mike likes Heavy Rain, and that appears to be an against all logic sort of thing.
Yeah, even I don't understand it fully.
But there's plenty of people who do love it unironically.
Yeah, like, they love Heavy Rain. They love Beyond Two Souls. I don't know what they'd say if you showed them, God, was it Fahrenheit?
Indigo Prophecy.
Indigo Prophecy. I kept wanting to call it Fahrenheit 451, but that was very insulting.
It's called Fahrenheit everywhere, but America. Yeah.
And I own that game, and I've never played it because I watched a Let's Play instead, and I feel like I have basically the same experience. There's a, like, 10-minute fight scene between a guy and his apartment.
Phil Fish is sitting in his chair right now saying, "See, I told you, you stupid kids, we're fucked because of this YouTube garbage."
Yeah. It's, I feel like there is, the line just lies solely on execution. If you can make a game that is filmic and does do it well, filmic, then, you know, go for it. Make that game. If you believe in your vision that much, but if you're doing it because you think video games are movies and that'll make it sell better, then you're going to make a compromised product.
Yeah. Of course, I also have to wonder, like, if Hideo Kojima had these options available to him, would he still have made the first Metal Gear Solid in the way that he did? Or would he have made it more of a Heavy Rain sort of game?
Or made it like Snatcher or something.
Yeah.
I was playing Ground Zeroes today, and Ground Zeroes, gameplay-wise, that game isn't bad. It makes all the improvements you would think they need to make Metal Gear a more modern series.
Like, it's that obvious evolution from 4, then, I guess, you say.
Yeah. Like, it controls well. Except for that one time I tried to toss a guy off a cliff, ended up falling off myself. That was shitty.
That's a video game.
But, so the writing of that game is the worst thing I've ever seen.
Hmm. That's weird, because that's what it's being sold on as the story.
Like, okay, so there's this character named Chico and Paz who you're rescuing, and Paz is a girl, and she's been in previous games. And the implication, I haven't found all the audio tapes, but the implication is that the bad guy has been forcing Chico to rape her repeatedly.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, they sew a bomb into her uterus.
Yeah, snookin' or snooze.
Yeah. And, like, this is the monstrous twist. And I was like, I sat there with the controller. I was like, what the fuck, Hideo Kojima? You are some kind of monster. Like, there's a line where, I don't know. I don't want to say anything's too taboo or anything's too mature. A certain point where, like, again, it comes down to execution. You could make this twist easily in a game. Sure.
Here's the thing.
You have to be good at it.
You can't do shock for the sake of doing shock, which feels like what's going on here. It's like, okay, he had a point to say. Maybe he had like an overall theme, but he's doing it by placing a bomb inside a 16-year-old girl's vagina. I don't know how that makes sense, except to be like this weird 90s extreme thing that we abandoned in the 90s.
I mean, like, moments before this, you meet the villain, who is a guy with all his skin burned off his face. His name, like, Skullface or something? I forget. But it's a stupid name. And it's like, you're introducing me to a Cobra Commander-like villain, and then immediately going to rape.
That's like, it's hilarious, because that reminds me of Double Dragon Neon's, like, boss, who's Skullmageddon. Fucking video games. Anyway.
It's just, like, he doesn't know what game he's making anymore. Like, you look at the Phantom Pain pictures, it's like, oh, well, there's a ram on a parachute. This might be Metal Gear again. But then you know that, like, after the ram with the parachute, there's going to be a girl who's going to be tortured and waterboarded, mm-hmm. and that's why she doesn't talk anymore. Yeah. It's like, no. Like, it's not so much that you can't mix the two. Like, I know I'm saying, like, you know, it feels like Hideo Kojima just going through extremes, and that's the bad part. It's that I think there's writers that could do that.
I think
it's just that he's not one of them.
Kojima's just in love with this contrast of catching you off guard among all this silly cartoony, you know, 80s spy action movie stuff to just suddenly have it get real.
But yeah.
He doesn't.
And I think it worked in Metal Gear Solid 3 and has not worked since then.
Now, here's what. Do you think maybe it's a translation thing? Do you think maybe this story has more impact than cerebral Japanese? I know you two know a little bit.
I really don't.
You don't? Okay.
I don't think, like, I feel like it's internationally going to be, it's so broad a concept. Just like, oh, we're going to talk about torture. But it's not talking about torture in a mature, interesting way. Mm-hmm. It's talking about torture in, like, it's like you take the cartoon concept of torture and then try to grimdark it up.
Well, it's also, maybe he just hasn't, like, evolved since the 90s, because this is all stuff that we realize needs to be handled with a certain amount of gravitas and respect and sensitivity. And he's still doing things in the way that he did back in Snatcher, where he just showed, like, a picture of a dude's head being eaten by maggots. Right? And, oh, this makes perfect sense back in the day. Now it's, oh, wait a minute, maybe we need to do a little more. Oh, you're just going to show that. And, okay.
You know what the best Metal Gear story of the last 10 years was? Metal Gear Rising. Because it made no sense, but it made no sense in the elaborate, intricate way that Metal Gear stories shouldn't.
The game was so fucking amazing.
Like, at the end, the Senator's explanation was like, oh, I understand what he's going for. He's fucking crazy, but I understand it. It's like, okay, that totally makes me want to fight him, and then they make everything work out so perfectly for that fight. It's like, that's great. And then you go to Metal Gear Solid, where it's like, well, Snake has been injected with Fox Dye, he has a year to live, he's going to become a human weapon. And then, no, they injected him with the other opposite Fox Dye, which heals him, but then infects Big Boss, who is for some reason alive, and Solidus was the one that was actually dead. And that's the one they used the biometric data on, so Ocelot could get control of all the nanomachines in the world, but it wasn't actually Ocelot Liquid, it was like Liquid used nanomachines, because Ocelot was trying to convince himself he was Liquid, but then he had a psychotic break and then actually believed he was Liquid, even after the nanomachines were shut off.
Uh-huh. And so, Fox Dye.
How much of that did you make up? Because I can't
tell.
It was
entirely real. I told you I actually had to study the Metal Gear lore recently, and that's Metal Gear Solid 4, actually.
I feel like this all ends with you just, like, we find you in a room muttering to yourself about Fox Dye, and we just put a hand on your shoulder.
Can we just have a game with the boss, the original, like, the female boss? Can we just have that game?
I think that's where they have to go next. Like, where you've now covered almost the entire timeline.
Okay, but the monkey paw twist to this is going to be, we learn about how the boss was raped, and that's why she became a soldier.
Jesus.
Brought to you by Gary Whitta.
Oh, God.
All right.
We have to go back, probably... Doc.
Are there any other games anyone's to play in?
I could talk about Naruto and the 45-minute cutscene.
Sure, did Hideo Kojima write it?
Maybe. It involves a woman dying.
At the point they made that cutscene is like...
Why? But yeah. I came to the realization of being like, I have been sitting here for a half an hour and I haven't touched my controller.
So, like, could you just, like, show an anime in the middle of playing this video game? Like, is it...
It's all an engine. It's just, like, you get a flashback. It's just a flashback where there weren't any fights. So there's nothing for the game to offer you as gameplay. So you just sit there and get told a very nice story that's done really well. But I just had this funny realization that I went 45 minutes without touching my controller.
It's that problem anime games have. Like, do we retell the story? Or are people going to be pissed if they're like, we go past without it?
If we really want to talk about it, I'm enjoying this game. I just feel like they're a little... They want to accurately tell the story of the war, but they're so constrained by their one-on-one fight system, they're having to fudge so much of, like, how the story's told.
Right.
It's still a good game, and it looks really pretty. So, if you're an anime nerd, you should buy it.
For more information about Naruto, listen to the Jumpcast.
God, we have so much information about Naruto.
What about anybody else? Games?
I bought Wolfenstein, the New Order. Haven't actually played it yet. Probably will over the holiday 4th weekend.
That is a hefty download.
Yeah, yes. That when it finishes downloading is the holiday season.
Yeah, that's crazy because if they want that digital games to be a thing, you can't have 40 gig downloads. That is going to kill households.
It blew my mind when you said it was 4 discs on the Xbox 360. I'd never heard that before.
4 gigs on the 360, 1 disc on Xbox One, but a mandatory 50 gig install. That is 10% of the entire hard drive space. It's theoretical hard drive space.
For Wolfenstein, a game that people thought was going to be terrible.
And I'm glad it's good, but Jesus Christ, guys. Right. Dave, any playing games?
Well, yeah, I mean, real quick, I'll just mention, someone said, brought up The Adventures of Shugi and the the giveaway that the developer Smudgecat did. He did an interesting blog post. I tweeted about it earlier. His newest game is called Growing Pains, and he's British, so he doesn't understand that he named it after a really popular 80s American television show. But basically he released that game on the 360 a while ago and just brought it to PC and was kind of hoping it would be like an infusion of cash for him. And it kind of turned out not to be. I think he said he only sold about 190 copies.
Jeez.
And he was heavily criticized for the graphics because they were really amateurish. Like, you know, fractals and, you know, fractals were cool when I discovered them in like ninth grade.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, kind of, I got over that, and lots of gradients and, you know, rainbow gradients and just really subpar graphics. And considering Shugi and his other game, Gateways, both had really good like pixel art or hand-drawn graphics, it was a big disappointment. So he went in and redid all the graphics to kind of try to, I guess, make amends, so to speak, on the PC version. And kind of in the meantime, came up with that idea to do the giveaway to try to get a little more extra attention, because honestly, you know, he said this is his last hurrah in games right now, that he's actually going to have to go on a hiatus because this didn't sell enough to fund his next game.
Oh wow.
So, you know, he's going back to his day job and everything. But
that's depressing.
You know, anybody who maybe looked at Growing Pains, maybe I did a video, maybe you watched my video, or some of the other bigger guys, Northern Lion or somebody like that, if you saw it and you dismissed it because it looked bad, give it another chance. It's like $5 or $3 on sale on Steam. You know, it might allow this guy to make more awesome games. Like Shugi is great. Gateways are great. Gateways is great. This game is great. But it's one of those times, and I guess we were talking about graphics earlier. Maybe that was a more appropriate time to bring it up. But, you know, graphics don't matter if they look good in the style that you're going for.
Yeah, if you have an art style, you're right.
Exactly. If you have an art style and you hit it, it doesn't matter how lo-fi they are, that your graphics are. But when you just whiff as hard as he did with this game, it really doesn't matter. People are literally saying, I don't care. I don't care how good the gameplay is. I don't care if you're going to send me, you know, reviews and videos of people saying this game plays really well. I don't have any time for it because it's just the ugliest thing I think I've ever seen. And it really was almost headache-inducing, flashing color changes on the levels and, you know, like I said, fractals and just crazy, really just core graphic choices. And it looks like an Xbox indie game. And, you know, it was originally, but this is from a guy who's made other great games. So, you know, people, check it out, Smudged Cat Games. It's on Steam, obviously, but, you know, give it a second look if you dismissed it early on. And, you know, maybe he'll get to a point where he can potentially come back and make some more games, because he makes really good games.
The version that's on Steam, is that the improved version? It's the only version on Steam.
And he's actually changed all the materials, all the marketing materials to the updated graphics. And the graphics still aren't great, but he changed from this weird, like, I just discovered the gradient tool style graphics to hand-drawn, like line-drawn graphics.
I'm kind of hoping that giveaway worked out okay, because I don't remember what game it was, but there was a game that some developer gave away for Halloween. And it just got so abused that it just, I remember reading blog posts.
Gilbert over on, blanking on the name. It was one of the Blackwell games I think he gave away.
Oh, yeah, was it Gemini Rue?
Gemini Rue, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, was it? I think it was one of those. It was whatever that developer is. God, I don't know why I can't all
it's
of a sudden.
The Reddits descended upon it, and I guess he was paying for each of those Steam keys, and
it
went real bad.
Yeah, and it really did go bad for me.
So I saw the Shuggy one, I'm just like, oh god, I hope this doesn't happen again.
Yeah, please just don't let this completely, and so far from what I've talked back and forth with him, because I was, he sent me an early review copy, and I took a look at it, and, you know, in my video, I lightly criticized it for the graphics, but he was kind of appreciative of the fact that I didn't rip him apart and try to focus on the positives of the game. And we've been talking a little bit, very little bit, through Twitter. And, you know, so far I haven't heard that it got heavily abused. But, yeah, leave it to the internet.
Because that last one was, like, people were literally just taking hundreds and hundreds of keys at a time and reselling them. And
geez. Yeah. Wajidai Games, that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So, like, there was a thing where Ouya announced a pass for $6, or $60 a year, where you can play all games, and then didn't tell the developers. Yeah. So now everyone's canceling their Ouya products.
Oh, at least one that I saw.
Ouya.
They're probably going to be more that follows, especially if they're not getting a cut of this.
More like, ooh, no. Nobody's made that joke before, right?
Never.
Okay. Nope.
All right, let's wrap.
Sure.
Free to play 85. Next week we'll be back with Far Cry 3 Owner's Book Club. Hopefully. Assuming we actually record.
Played that in preparation, and then because every time I've been on, you guys have had the book club thing. I've just had to sit around awkwardly and not play the thing. This time I was ready.
You played through the first... What do you think of the first 5 minutes?
That was a really nice fucking phone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all I've got. That's as much of the game that I played. All
right. Free to play 85. Bye.
Bye. So long.
Take it easy.